It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars.
All of this could have been avoided if we followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer?
Now, here's Lars Larson.
Be sure and keep that volume up.
On FM News 101.
It's going to be one of the highest rated shows ever.
KXL.
Woo-hoo! Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Happy Monday and welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, supplying honestly provocative talk radio for the Pacific Northwest, the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. I'm glad to have you on board, and we've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about the NFL. Now, I always warn people ahead of time. I know less about sports than almost anybody on the planet, but here's what I do know, and I'll give you a couple more thoughts on the commentary. What some of the NFL players is doing or are doing is wrong. And what the president said, well, he might have chosen different language to use it. I think he was absolutely right. And the NFL needs to understand what is being done and who watches their sport. And I think they're going to pay for it. And if they're willing to pay for it, that's okay. I've always said that I believe in civil disobedience as long as you're willing to pay the penalty. But we have so much more to talk about as well. You know I'm going to get your phone calls and emails into this. Anthony Weiner got 21 months in prison for the weird stuff he was up to that he didn't seem to be able to quit. We'll talk about whether or not he should have received more than 21 months in prison for sexting with a 15-year-old girl in a case that rocked Hillary Clinton's campaign. That may be the thing that bothered an awful lot of people in America who liked Hillary Clinton and said we didn't like the fact that his marriage to Huma Abedin, who has been the right-hand person to Hillary Clinton for the last couple of decades, they didn't like the effect it had on Hillary Clinton's campaign. I don't necessarily know how upset they were about the things he was actually doing, but Anthony Weiner now going to prison for 21 months. I think he should have had a lot more punishment than that. But then you have to put yourself in the position of a father or a grandfather who's got a 15-year-old girl in his family. If you found out that a former congressman, then a congressman, was sending dirty pictures to your 15-year-old daughter or granddaughter, what kind of punishment do you think he should get? Why is Seattle building a light rail line based on some ridiculously phony numbers? We'll talk about that issue today as well. And should the U.S. Department of Education withdraw the Dear Colleague letter? This was something started in the previous presidential administration, in which colleges were told to set up kangaroo courts to go after people who had been accused of sexual wrongdoing against some of their fellow students at American college campuses, but could not be prosecuted because the evidence was not there. So they decided to throw out the Constitution, throw out due process, and invent something brand new. Well, the new administration is going to do away with that. We'll talk to an expert on the subject. If you have a problem with dirty needles in your city, and what city in America doesn't have a problem with dirty needles these days, you know, the ones that are used by heroin addicts and other intravenous drug abusers, is the answer to give away more needles and kits of needles? Well, that's what's happening in Snohomish County. We'll get into that as well. Is the city of Bend tone deaf to voters by waging war on the car? I'll give you a couple of thoughts on something they're doing there where they seem to be anxious to tell people to leave their vehicles. And in rural parts of the Northwest, leaving behind your vehicle is just not realistic. Are the Democrats using a phony excuse to try to block one of President Trump's judicial nominees from the Northwest? We'll talk to Tung Yin, our professor at Lewis and Clark Law School, about whether or not that's realistic. Wolf numbers are now growing in parts of the Northwest, and that's a new development I want to alert you to. And should Seattle voters get a say on whether or not Seattle offers safe injection sites for illegal drugs? I know, lots of drugs in the news, but remember, heroin has now turned out to be one of the chief causes of death, especially of young people here in the United States of America. And how is that Obamacare working out for you? While John McCain and others within the Republican rhino crowd are trying to block any kind of sensible changes in Obamacare, even a slight reduction, because we're certainly not going to get a clean repeal right now, let me suggest this to you. Lane County's government workers have now voted to go on strike over a proposal that they should have to pay some of their health insurance costs. Some of that goes back to Obamacare as well, and I'll get into that. And we'll talk about the hack of a Facebook page in which one young man is facing criminal charges because he hacked into a girl's social media account and found naked pictures of her there, and then he made those public. Now, I don't think she should have taken the pictures to begin with. Certainly shouldn't have put them on the internet in Facebook. But this young man is going to appropriately face charges. Is he facing enough charges? We'll get to that and your phone calls and emails. Always welcome right here. And you know that naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold, hard facts from Lars.
I absolutely despise the anti-American message of the NFL player protests, and I think the No Fans Left League, the NFL, will soon find out how many other Americans agree with President Trump's comments on Friday.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
I have a feeling a lot of people in that room who were cheering on President Donald Trump on Friday are also football viewers. Now, I don't watch much football, truth be told. I like a game now and then, but when I see stories about the likes of Colin Kaepernick, I agree with Trump. Still, I'd like to know what they're actually protesting. Is it police brutality? I've heard that is one excuse. Is it lack of opportunity in America for black citizens? The stories today name some or all of those questions. But those issues were all around during the previous president, so I figure what it's really about is Donald Trump. And the crazy thing is, folks keep saying this is about First Amendment free speech. Please understand, the U.S. Constitution protects your free speech from government intrusion, not from your boss. If you work in McDonald's and you start protesting that meat is murder to customers, expect to get a pink slip. If you're a member of the spandex mafia and you start telling customers at the car dealership where you work about the evils of fossil fuel, you'll be pedaling your bicycle to the unemployment office. If you don't like the result of an election, grow up. It's the best system anywhere on the planet found so far. When and if we ever go back to the rule of the mob, where elections are decided by the loudest protests in the streets, then the great American experiment with self-government is over. From our Facebook page, which has been thoroughly de-hacked, Jacob Bellinger writes, and Lars, thanks for using your position to reach a lot of people here in the Northwest to advocate for logging. I live in a small town in eastern Oregon. There were 5 mills up and running when we moved here 20 years ago. Today, there's 1 mill left, and it's on its last legs. In that time frame, we've seen the shift and have an appointment from private employment meant and companies and logging companies shifting clearly over to 70% government employment in our county via the Forest Service. Every year we watch the forests burn, which are renewable resources and we throw time and money at without hesitation, essentially redirecting those fires to the wilderness.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Arm Yourself Gun Store in Hillsboro. Proudly veteran-owned and open 7 days a week. ArmYourselfStore.com.
I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to a group. To the football players who chose to take part in an anti-American protest and to the team owners who backed them up. Today's best emails, but you can send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. Cliff writes, and Lars, the president spoke in the same manner on the matter that got him elected. And as from the beginning said, yeah, and some said nay. So what's really new? My take, I thought from the beginning of this issue, Kaepernick, that the wrong platform for this protest was selected. I think the entire protest itself is wrong, and it's merely an extension of the Obama years of hate for the police. Needless to say, I think anybody that pursues this protest without addressing the larger issue are wrongheaded as well. Thus far, stemming from the original protest by Kaepernick, both Kaepernick and the NFL have suffered financially. The mood of the nation seems to be, if you unfairly attack an individual or group, you'll be held to task. What I saw while watching the news coverage of Sunday's protest was, for the most part, a bunch of protesters protesting the wrong issue. Would I have called them SOBs? Probably not. But I'm not the president. I'm not Trump. And frankly, Lars, nobody would care what I say anyway. I think they, the NFL players, are wrong on both the issue and the platform. I'll get to your phone calls and your emails in just a moment. You're welcome to weigh in, and naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. Let me go to Mike first in Corvallis, since I've sounded off on the NFL protests. You think I'm going to get any naysayers today, Mike, who think that the players are right on this?
I don't think so, Lars. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What I wanted to bring up is, do you remember a couple years ago whenever Tim Tebow took a knee?
Yep.
Whenever he was praying on the field, and the left jumped all over him and ridiculed him. And, you know, they never stick up for his First Amendment rights, but now, oh, my goodness, they have to take care of the protesting players.
Yeah, they do. And that's, if you heard the commentary just, you know, 15 minutes, 10 minutes ago, the thing I want people to understand is people constantly throw out that you have a First Amendment right. The First Amendment only protects your speech from the government interfering with it. If your boss tells you, I don't want you talking about X, your boss has the right to do that, and you have the right to quit and find another job if you want to. I mean, fortunately, I've done talk radio for more than 20 years now. I've never once had a boss come to me and say, do not talk about X. But if a boss came to me, if one of my bosses came to me and said, look, I don't want any discussion of X, Y, or Z, he has the right to do that, and the First Amendment has nothing to do with that. So when people throw out, well, the players have First Amendment rights, yeah, they have a right not to have the government shut down their speech. Their bosses can shut it down anytime they want. And I want people to understand that, because the NFL is perfectly capable of doing what NASCAR did. NASCAR has now announced, if you protest the playing of our national anthem, you're out. And the team owners are told, you're out. And if your employees, your race crew protest the anthem, they're out. And they could do that. The NFL has said, no, we're gonna actually stand up for our players' right or ability to protest the national anthem. If that's what the NFL wants to buy into, go ahead. But an awful lot of Americans are going to think less of the NFL as a result.
Absolutely wrong platform.
Wrong platform altogether. If they want to do it off the field, go ahead and do it, and then your boss can decide whether or not he wants to keep you on. Let's go to James in Gresham. Hey, James, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind today?
Yes, hi, Lars. Well, I just wanted to add to the conflict that the flag, there are a lot of people all through the history of our country since we came out with a flag that have given their lives to do nothing more than to keep the flag flying. That was their goal. That's why they gave their lives. Now, the national anthem is a song about that flag. And it's for the people, our beliefs. It's not for the government. So to try and put it on to Trump, I mean, it's all a part of history. This all has been going on long before the NFL players started playing with their balls.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think unfortunately, you've got a bunch of players and a bunch of team owners that don't seem to understand the very people that they employ are the people that are watching their game. Thanks for the call, by the way. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
I'm just absolutely disgusted. I'm 47. I've been a Pittsburgh Steelers fan since I was 5 years old. And after what I saw yesterday, other than Alejandro Villanueva, who is a former Army captain and a former Army Ranger, who went down in the tunnel, put his hand over his heart, stood there for the national anthem, and then was somewhat ridiculed by his coach for not standing with the team, as far as I'm concerned, they can all just kiss my behind. I'm done with the NFL. I'm done with these shenanigans. Not standing for the national anthem, in my opinion, is no different than spitting in a veteran's face. So they can call it what they want to call it, but it's a farce, just like, you know, the whole Colin Kaepernick thing. He didn't start doing that until his career was in the tubes.
Yep. And by the way, Jim, Villanueva deserves our respect and our thanks because, you know, the guy did three tours in Afghanistan. The man was a very impressive service member. He went not to West Point, but to the U.S. Military Academy, a different school. He, when he was serving, he weighed 240 pounds, 6 foot nine. The guy was impressive. Now he's 340. And he got the Bronze Star because he went out and rescued guys under fire. This is an incredibly admirable individual, an American. And he didn't want to disrespect his country. And for the life of me, Jim, the weirdest argument I've heard lately about this over the weekend is, well, Donald Trump is being divisive by objecting to this. I think the players are being divisive because ultimately, for anybody who follows football or doesn't follow football, you're going to be asked, do you support the players' message? Well, their message seems to be, we reject the United States. They aren't even being specific about what it is that they don't like. As I said in the commentary, they've objected to opportunity for black Americans. They've objected to what they say is police brutality. They got a whole list of things, but if you think that's not divisive, when you take a very popular game in the United States of America and you force your players to say, I'll keep watching it even though you've taken a stance against a country I'm proud of, that itself is the divisive action. Not Donald Trump saying, hey, if these people are behaving that way, get them off the field. I don't think that's divisive. I think what the players are doing is divisive.
Exactly. You need to hit them in the pocketbook and stop watching the games. Stop going to the game. Stop buying the stuff. That's the only way you can get their attention is by hitting them in the pocketbook. I just hope enough people do it.
I hope they do, too, and I very much appreciate the call. Thanks. 866-HEY-LARS, live on the Radio Northwest Network, stretching from Bellingham to Ashland, from Idaho all the way to the Pacific Ocean. We're glad to take your phone calls and emails. Let me go to Travis. Travis, you wanted to say something about NASCAR's stance on this, which is the polar opposite to the NFL?
Yeah, Lars, I just wanted to interject because I see a lot of uneducated people out there over the weekend with all the social media blaze and everything and what Richard Petty had said and whatnot. Now, the main thing that I see when I read these threads is, well, what would you expect from a good old boys sport? And they're all racist and they're all white boys. There's no black people in NASCAR. There's no minorities in NASCAR. The thing that people don't realize is they watch what is on TV on the weekends, which is the three top-tier series in NASCAR, the Truck, the Nationwide Series, and the Cup Series. What they don't realize is NASCAR sanctions hundreds of tracks all over the United States and other countries, Canada, Mexico, as a matter of fact. There are hundreds and hundreds of NASCAR series. I can take my car. I drive a race car on a dirt track. I can take it up to Seattle, Monroe, Washington, just northeast of Seattle, buy a NASCAR license, race my little four-cylinder car up there under a NASCAR-sanctioned track. Now, my point being is I've been a huge race fan for years before I started racing. I go to these races. I see people of every color on the crews, driving the cars, doing all this. Being as there isn't any black people or any very few minorities in the top three series, everybody automatically jumps on this stereotype bandwagon.
I agree with you. You got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you in the Pacific Northwest on the Radio Northwest Network and glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Let's see. Kaepernick is to the NFL what Obama was to America. Well, perhaps. Let's go to Mike in Bellingham. And Mike, thanks a lot for listening on KGMI. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, the issue that you've been discussing, which really, really offended me yesterday. And I've got a thought on that, but it's something that would take a lot of commitment from Americans. And that thought is, fine, watch the games. But if anyone on a team at that game takes the knee during the opening ceremonies, during the Star Spangled Banner, pledge to not buy any product advertised during that game for 1 month. Brand of soda, advertise, buy another brand. Brand of chips, buy another brand. That would hit those owners in the pocket. That would hit the players long-term in the pocket, and I suspect would not take an awful lot of time, and all of a sudden they discover they were patriots.
It would send a very bright line message to the NFL about how Americans feel about this kind of protest. Listen, off the field, these players can say whatever it is the NFL is willing to tolerate, because even those people who think, well, you have First Amendment free speech, the First Amendment has nothing to do with it. And your free speech rights off the job, take a look. For the average job, if you're making 10 bucks an hour, your boss probably doesn't care too much what you say. Go in and take a high-profile job somewhere, and then tell me that if you go out and say crazy things on Facebook, that somehow it's not going to affect your job. Like John Doyle writes in from Puyallup, Washington. He's listening on KVI. He said, would we have seen this same kind of zeal for James Damore's First Amendment rights at work from the left? Mike, James Damore is the man who got let go from Google because he sat down and he wrote a long, thoughtful memo about the role of diversity in the high-tech company he was working for, and he got fired for it. Now, did you see this huge hue and cry saying, why, he has a right to his opinion? No, he had people saying, you should fire him because we don't like his opinion. Well, I'm not saying fire. I am saying this, that if people choose not to watch the NFL because their players engage in anti-American protests, and I'll defend that they're anti-American. Here's my point. If somebody came out and said, I don't like, you pick a particular topic, whatever it is, police brutality. I don't like the fact that a police officer had to shoot Michael Brown. Well, that's one specific thing you're protesting, and people can make a decision about whether or not they agree with you or not. In this case, what is it they're protesting? They don't like that Trump's in office. They don't like that Trump has an opinion and gives voice to the opinion. Well, those are First Amendment free speech acts as well. They don't like the result of the election. Well, if you don't like the result of the election, find a better system somewhere on planet Earth where a country does a better job of transitioning power and allowing the public to weigh in on who our leaders are. And if you don't like the result of the game, go and try and change the rules. See if you can do it. Hillary Clinton right now is proposing an end to the Electoral College because she didn't do very well in the Electoral College. She lost by about 60-some points. But until they change the rules, you accept the outcome of the game, the way that the game is played under those rules. And so all I can read this as is an anti-American protest saying America is a racist place where the police brutalize people because of the color of their skin, where the color of your skin will hold you back from opportunities. If you hate America that much, by all means, go play football in Australia. Go play football in Europe or play soccer in Europe. But for goodness sake, either help make your country better. But if you're going to condemn your country by refusing to stand for the national anthem, again, standing itself is not the point. The point is you are rejecting the very idea of the country that you live in that has given you all these great opportunities, including the opportunities to make a 7- or 8-figure salary by playing football. Again, I'm going to make all the room you need if there's a naysayer who thinks these ball players are right. Let's go to TJ. Hey, TJ, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, I really appreciate the show.
Thank you.
Even sometimes we have different opinions.
No worries.
I just wanted to say, in passing, before I made my one comment about specifically Villanueva, I believe it was the last name of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't think it is about standing so much. It's just those players in the NFL are using their platform to just make awareness on a social issue.
Okay, help me out then. What's the issue?
Absolutely. The issue is, Davi, that there are some people of color going through social injustices or targeted in some other places.
Like what? Tell me what it is, because you can't tell from the protest whether they're protesting the whole country or whether they're protesting a single individual, can you?
So my point is this exactly. You can't tell until they take a knee and then you say, well, what are they doing? Are they protesting the flag? And then you go and study up about it because they did that. And then suddenly you're more aware of what actually happened.
TJ, you must have. I read a couple of dozen stories over the weekend hoping to suss out what is it they're objecting to. And you cannot tell what they're objecting to.
Specifically, Kaepernick took his knee when he did it originally about what was Michael Brown, the one in Ferguson or something like that. So those are specific instances, but it'll always trace back to being social injustices, those being what's the word I'm looking for when a person.
So it's anything you want to object to is covered, because when you object to Michael Brown's shooting, let's remember what Michael Brown was. He had just committed a robbery of a liquor store. He had assaulted a cop. He was about to assault the cop the second time.
I don't mean to interject. I mean to say that I agree with you in that. I'm not saying, like I said, it's not whether you agree with it or not. It's they're just using their platform, whether it's right or wrong, to say, hey, look at this issue. And a lot of people after that would say, like, well, why don't they go about it a different way? And a lot of players also are doing that, too, not including Kaepernick. There's
Is it their platform?
I think as long as the NFL doesn't mind, which we saw that after Trump put his two cents in, Roger Goodell said that was fine and let him do what they decided wanted to do. So that means the NFL decides that it's okay.
They own it. They own it, and therefore they have endorsed the protest of their players. Because
I agree.
I both know that at our work, the boss can tell you, I don't want you discussing certain things at work. And
Absolutely. You don't
have any First Amendment right that overrides your employment agreement with your boss. The First Amendment does not apply to private parties. It applies to the government.
I see that as well. And that was just a passing thought because I just wanted to just kind of bring that up. But my main point was, if I can get in before I let you go, is that that gentleman from Villanueva, I think that the biggest thing with that his teammates were upset with him about was before there was an interview with Mike Tomlin and articles that came out afterwards, everyone on that 52-man roster had agreed to stay inside the tunnel. Everyone said, yes, they were going to do that. So then when he did not do that, they were surprised because they thought everyone had agreed on that 52-man roster that was going to happen. So they had no idea that was going to happen. That's why they were a little, like, put off by it. So.
Well, I understand that, but when Mike Tomlin, the coach, and again, you know how little I know about football, but when the coach says your loyalty should be to your team, and Villanueva says my loyalty first is to my country, which one do you think is right?
No, well, he never said that. In the interview, Mike Tomlin, what's worth looking at, he just said that, which is the key word there. It's just unity. We're not doing it necessarily to protest or not protest. We're just doing it so we are all together, all on the same page. So when you go and you say, hey, I'm going to do this, I absolutely agree. Well, stand by your word either way, or at least let your teammates know I've changed my mind. I don't want to do this afterwards. That's the only reason why I guess he received some flack for it, because he hadn't told anybody but had agreed beforehand. So,
well, he rapped him pretty hard. Tomlin, to me, appeared to be saying, when you have loyalty, he said, like I said, I was looking for 100% participation. We were going to be respectful of our football team. That leads me to believe if he had said, well, if Tomlin or if Villanueva wants to go out with a different message that he's proud of his country and he's not willing to effectively not condemn but not honor his country by standing during the national anthem, apparently Tomlin believes that loyalty to team should come before loyalty to country.
For sure. I don't know if that's quite what's grabbed out of it, but I wasn't even – that's so people are going to have different opinions on it by the way they feel and being emotional on it, which is totally the case. I mean, absolutely, that's the case. But I more so just meant, you know, that they had came out with two different interviews and things like that that said that everyone had agreed and that didn't happen.
Well,
so I can see why some of the teammates.
Let me point out some other difference. People are smart. Mobs and groups are not. You know why people say that? Because you can have individuals who individually are very smart people. But as a group, they can sometimes do things because the group puts pressure on them. Here's the key part from the coverage this weekend that I saw. Tomlin told the media that prior to kickoff, the Steelers held a team meeting and decided, though not unanimously, to not come out of the locker room for the national anthem. So all the other players that didn't come out that voted no on not coming out, on saying, so in other words, when they took a vote, and he admits it wasn't unanimous. But the rest of the team felt pressure to do what the group was doing. And
so then is it so then my next question is, because I facts don't lie. So if that's what was happening, then isn't it kind of the same thing that team is doing? They said, well, we're making a stand. We'll do the same thing. Say no. Speak up for your country. Speak up for your flag. Regardless, these people are Trump's talking about firing people that are standing that are not standing for the national anthem.
Right.
So he may get fired for standing for the national anthem. We'll stick up for your. And either way, like I said, I don't
but
mean.
But here's the danger. If you're part of a football team and the coach decides who plays how many minutes and who gets to have those opportunities that either lead to bigger opportunities for you.
That's not a risk. That's not a risk a person's willing to take. That's a risk that people are willing to take when they take the knee, though. So, I mean, it goes both ways.
I understand.
I would have liked to have seen them, too.
But I can also understand that if you're not one of the not part of the starting lineup and you say, should I go against the coach on this? Let's see. My career depends on this. My paycheck for my family
depends on it.
My livelihood, my ability to be an attractive player to other teams. I'm going to go ahead and go with the group on this, even though I don't actually believe in it, because at the end of the day, is it worth losing your paycheck and the way your family makes its living to be able to stand up and do that? Obviously, for Villanueva, it was. For the others,
they
apparently went along with the crowd and decided, I don't like a country run by mobs. Mobs who say, hang that cop. We think he's guilty, even though the system decided he's not. Get rid of that president. We don't like the choice of the American voters. A country run by mobs? You want one of those? There are plenty of them on planet Earth. America should not be a country run by mobs. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. By the way, this Friday, I'll celebrate First Amendment Friday from the studios of KUMA in Pendleton, which is one of our Radio Northwest affiliates, before going out seeing if I can find Bambi's dad out there somewhere this weekend and see if I can put a little venison in the freezer. Rod writes in by email, talk@LarsLarson.com. Lars, I'm a longtime fan of professional football. I watched my first game in the Coliseum at L.A. at the ripe old age of 10, a game between Green Bay and the real Rams. But I'm turning the games off until the owners take charge and end the protests. I won't buy any more Seahawks gear, and I'm not watching any more games. I can't help but wonder what the protesters find wrong with the system that pays them millions of dollars. As a friend of mine just emailed, the NFL is going to stand for the No Fans League if this keeps up. Rod, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Let's go to Tanya. Tanya, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks, Lars. I just wanted to point out, the longer I've listened, I was following my Facebook feed yesterday. I think it's important that we recognize the Dallas Cowboys, who are billed as America's team, and who has an owner, Jerry Jones, that has said unconditionally, if you do not stand for our national anthem and stand for the respect of this team and our country, you will not be playing. You are out. You are fired. And I believe every coach in the NFL should take that same stance, and then we wouldn't even have this problem right now. But I'm going to be really proud to watch Monday Night Football tonight and see my Dallas Cowboys standing strong and proud for our country.
Based on what he said before, I don't think Jerry Jones will tolerate any less.
No, not at all. And I just feel everyone should follow suit, and we wouldn't even be having to have this discussion this issue, which I think is ridiculous. We're in America. Stand up for your flag. Stand up for the national anthem. Be strong. Be proud. Be American.
Absolutely right. Tanya, thank you for the call. Let's go to Merlin in Corvallis. Merlin, thanks for listening on Clue. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, I just want to echo what everyone's saying. I really believe that we should show the NFL where the real power lies. We, the people, we built that league. We supported that league for all these years. We built it into the giant $12 billion giant that it is, and we can take it away. We need to boycott them. This is ridiculous. That is the flag of the United States of America, and they make millions and millions of dollars annually, more than most of us. They make more in a year than most of us make in a lifetime. And for them to not stand and to pull this BS, we just need to boycott them. Any advertisers, any business out there that's advertising with the NFL, they need to stop. Anyone that's buying NFL products, stop. Because we need to show them where the power lies. I'm fired up about this, Lars.
Merlin, I am, you know, as I said, I'm not somebody who says, oh, I spend every Sunday or every Monday night watching football. But I'm curious about whether anybody's figured out, why are the owners doing this? Why are they backing this? And the only thing I can figure out is either A, some of the owners agree with the players, or B, they're afraid of their own workforce and how their own workforce might react if they take a different stance, or they think that the majority of fans agree with the players, which I don't think is true, but that's just me.
I don't think it's true either, Lars. Lars, I don't think it's true either. I think the majority, I mean, it's just like Trump. We voted for Trump. We put him in there. And this is what's going on right now is exactly why. Because he says it like it is. He says what most of us think. And this is what he did in this situation. We don't want those players taking a knee. We want them standing proud for our flag.
Yep.
What happened to the Pledge of Allegiance? I mean, you know, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. What happened, Lars?
What's happened is a group of people who are very, very privileged. I mean, all these players are elites. They may not be educational elites, but in terms of money and celebrity, they are elites. And they've decided that they don't like the country that afforded them that opportunity. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by, playback.
And now,
Lars. Real Red Meat Radio.
should be played at high volume.
This is the Lars Larson Show, broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
When enough people make false promises, words stop meaning anything.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
We meet at a time of both immense promise and great peril.
Now, here's Lars Larson.
Bunch of swipe left on Lars Larson. Some dignity back in the White House.
On FM News 101.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails and the issues of the day in just a moment. But there's a very important subject that I think is before us right now. It has to. We have to go all the way back to the Obama administration and look at some changes that were pushed on American colleges and the way that they treat people who are accused of wrongdoing against their fellow, you know, classmates in sexual crimes that are alleged. Hans Bader joins me now, who's a senior attorney at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Hans, I don't want to mess this up, so I want you to go back and explain the Dear Colleague letter that was sent out under the guise of Title IX, instructing colleges what to do with young men, mostly young men, who are accused of some kind of sexual assault against one of their fellow students.
Yes, the Obama administration issued new rules for colleges and schools, telling them that they should ban the clear and convincing evidence standard, restrict cross-examination, and restrict the appeal rights of accused people. And it didn't do this by going through the regular rulemaking process where an agency comes up with a new regulation, vets it, lets the public comment on it, and then, you know, issues a final rule after getting everybody's input. Instead, it imposed these new rules on colleges out of the blue in a Dear Colleague letter on April 4, 2011. And the practical effect of this letter was to tell colleges to do things that in some cases violated state law. Like in Oregon and Washington, there are administrative procedure acts which give college students certain rights. And some of these rights are things that the Dear Colleague letter strongly discouraged colleges from allowing. So it created a potential tension with state law. It created a potential conflict with federal court rulings in certain parts of the country, which have said that students have a right to cross-examine their accuser when the case boils down to a credibility contest. And it also ignored a long line of past administrative decisions under the Bush and Clinton administrations, which had given colleges and schools a lot more freedom about how to design and run their campus disciplinary systems.
Let me ask you about, and I'll cite a specific example of a case involving, I think it was four basketball players, and a young lady who'd been at a party accused these men of sexually assaulting her. And the local district attorney looked into it, and he couldn't find the evidence to back it up. And so they didn't even bring an indictment, let alone take it to trial. The school then responded by saying, well, we're going to handle this differently. And in a case like that, where there isn't the you know, the amount of information you'd need to be able to bring an indictment, were schools under these rules adopted by the Obama administration saying, you're going to effectively put this young man on trial for the things that are that he's alleged to have done? He doesn't have the right to cross-examine his accusers, which is guaranteed in the Constitution. He doesn't have a right necessarily to counsel or to due process or to any of the other protections that are included in the Constitution. But we may take away your education and kick you out of the school as a government institution. Remember, this isn't a private college. And that was the practical effect, that you could be unconstitutionally deprived of the rest of your education and kicked out of the school. On the basis of it wasn't even preponderance of the evidence, wasn't it? Or was it preponderance, 51%?
Well, they said preponderance, but then they made things even worse. Like at Michigan State, they found that Michigan State had supposedly violated Title IX by not giving a person who made false accusations academic remedies and not giving her interim relief against the accused people fast enough. The Obama Education Department found that the accuser had made a false accusation, but they nevertheless said that she was the wrong party because the college didn't move fast enough to order the people she accused of sexual assault to stay away from her. And as a result, They found the college in violation of Title IX and told them, the college, that it had to offer her a remedy, such as academic adjustment.
Even though she apparently made up the charges. The charges were false.
Yeah, the prosecutor refused to bring the case. The college then basically banished the people she accused of sexual assault from academic buildings that they shared with her, you know, like for classes and libraries, basically turned their lives upside down. Then the college ultimately found that her claims were false. The education department looked into the evidence and found no reason to disagree with the college and said so. And then even though the education department itself under Obama found that the accusation was correctly found to be false by Michigan State, said that Michigan State had somehow mistreated the false accuser by not giving her faster and stronger interim remedies against the accused people. And interim remedies is something that the Obama Education Department said that should be imposed against people before they're ever found guilty of anything. You know, you accuse someone of sexual assault and the college is expected to boot them out of the dorm if they share the dorm with you and tell them to stay out of the library if you might, you know, you might end up seeing them at the library because mm-hmm. students could end up sharing a library. And this is a very abused concept because I think we can all agree that where, you know, a student has been indicted and there's real strong evidence that they may have committed forcible rape, that they probably should be ordered to stay away from the complainant.
But
when there's been no such finding and the prosecutor has already refused to bring charges and there's a good chance that the allegation will turn out to be false, why should you allow someone's life to be turned upside down by essentially being banished from campus when they're probably innocent and the college will probably eventually find that they're innocent? You know, no federal court has ever found that a person who makes false sexual harassment or assault allegations has a right to a particularly fast, you know, determination of guilt or innocence of the person they accused in any workplace case. If you sue for sexual harassment in federal court, they'll only give you, you know, damages if you actually were a victim of sexual harassment, not if you falsely made accusations of sexual harassment. But the Obama Education Department was so twisted that it found Michigan State in violation of Title IX for not giving remedies faster to this person that it itself conceded had made a false accusation, which is just nuts, and it makes a mockery even of the preponderance standard they insisted colleges use.
I'd agree. Hans Bader is a senior attorney at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. So how has Education Secretary Betsy DeVos changed this?
Well, she polled on September 22, she rescinded the April 4, 2011 Obama administration Dear Colleague letter, which had, you know, banned the clear and convincing evidence standard and, you know, restricted cross-examination and appeal rights. And she said that colleges can now choose between the two traditional disciplinary standards of preponderance or clear and convincing, and they can choose to allow, you know, cross-examination in cases involving credibility disputes. And they don't have to allow, you know, appeals by the complainant of a not guilty verdict of the accused. Although she didn't say that they can't voluntarily continue most of the things the Obama administration told them to do. She just said they're not going to be required to do these things. And the reason she said that was because, in her words, you know, the rule of, you know, the era of rule by letter is over. We're not going to issue these new binding rules imposed on colleges and schools without going through the legally required notice and comment process mandated by the Federal Administrative Procedure Act. We're not just going to issue, you know, decrees out of the blue. So we're going to essentially restore things to the way they were before the Obama administration issued these new requirements for colleges and schools out of the blue in Dear Colleague letters.
Hans, as I understand it, though, there are some states that say we're going to stick to the old set of rules. Is that the case? And
yeah,
won't they face a constitutional challenge from students who say you're not giving me my rights as an accused?
Yes, California has already adopted the 2011 Obama Dear Colleague letter. And so it essentially already restricted the cross-examination rights and the presumption of innocence rights and other rights of accused people. And, you know, sad to say, most of the things the Obama administration said in its Dear Colleague letter didn't violate due process, because your due process rights aren't very broad in a college disciplinary proceeding, unlike a criminal prosecution. You have some due process rights, but they're fairly weak. I think the one possible exception may be the restriction on cross-examination rights, because there's a case called it's called Black Coalition versus Portland School District, where the Federal Appeals Court with jurisdiction over California indicated back in 1973 that you do have a right to cross-examine your accuser, even in school discipline proceedings when it boils down to a credibility contest. And I think that is at odds with the California law passed by, you know, Democratic lawmakers there that takes the Obama administration's Dear Colleague letter and imposes all those restrictions on California public universities. I think there's an argument there that that violates due process in certain cases. I know their counterargument is, well, the Black Coalition case didn't involve sexual assault. In sexual assault cases, the victim is more frightened of the, you know, the accused than in, you know, garden variety school dispute cases. And so your due process rights is less if you're accused of sexual assault. I'm not sure I accept the conclusion, but it's worth noting that the Obama administration didn't just restrict cross-examination in rape cases where you could be very frightened of your, you know, your assailant. They also restricted them in all sexual harassment cases, even in many cases where it's just offensive conduct or words. And in many of those cases, the amount of, you know, the fear of the person you're accusing is probably less than in some other cases of garden variety assault or, you know, vandalism or things like that, where colleges in this region have long allowed cross-examination of the accuser. And in fact, under Oregon and Washington law, under their state administrative procedure acts, from rulings by the state intermediate court of appeals in each state, you have that right as an accused person.
Yep.
I don't know if California has a similar law, so there could also possibly be a tension or a violation of California state constitution.
Hans, I've got a break at this point, but I thank you very much for the time and the work you do at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you.
You bet. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and emails. It always amazed me when I saw that colleges were starting to violate the rights of people who are accused of various things and then turn around and say, well, we're not worried about constitutional rights there. But boy, if constitutional rights, the way that people imagine them, applied to NFL players on the sidelines, boy, you get lots of people speaking up about that. Let's go to Anthony, who's a naysayer. Anthony, you know that we love naysayers on this program. Where do you and I disagree?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, do you know the entire national anthem song?
Do I know that, including the stanza that they very rarely sing because it has to do with stomping on the British and it's a little too rude to use? I couldn't say I know it by heart. I know the national anthem. I know the stanzas that are usually sung at public events. Sure, why?
Well, there's a line in there that goes, "No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror or flight or the gloom of the grave and the star-spangled banner in triumph doth wave."
So are you telling me that your theory is that NFL players don't like the song, that they don't mind the country or the president or anything else, but their actual protest is against the song and its lyrics? Is that what you're saying?
I think the players have came to accept America, and they're trying to make it better. They're trying to make it a greater place, what the president should be doing. And part of that is going over and stuff that has been wrong, and the song is wrong. If you sing the whole song, it talks about slaves, and it's, I mean, why would you force someone to sing that song?
No, they're not being forced to sing it. And frankly, I was hoping you didn't ask me to sing it because people would pay me not to sing. It is that ugly. I don't even sing in the shower. It offends the shower head when I sing in the shower. But Anthony, you're not really suggesting that the protest is not against police brutality or unfair opportunities for Black Americans, but it's about the lyrics of the song. That's a unique one. I haven't heard that one before, and I haven't seen that in any comments by the players. But if you want to make a place better, why not stand up for the anthem, say you believe in your country, but say my country has problems that need to be fixed? I mean, people know that I love America. I stand up for the national anthem, but I'm also the first person to tell you that my country has things that need to be changed. My state has things that need to be changed. My city has things that need to be changed. But I don't think I accomplish anything by saying I'm going to sit on my thumbs or I'm going to go down on one knee during the national anthem. I'm not sure what that accomplishes. Are you?
Yeah, it's showing that you don't want to participate in something you don't agree with.
Well, so what is it you don't agree with? Because even at this point, even your interpretation, I don't know what these players are protesting. Colin Kaepernick actually explained that he didn't like the shooting of Michael Brown, which was totally justified. That is, the shooting was justified, not Kaepernick's protest. Do you know what it is they think is wrong with America that they want changed other than the lyrics of the song?
Yeah, I mean, the police brutality is being treated unfairly. It's having a president that clearly isn't taking the stand as a president. He's more worried about a game. At the end of the day, it's a game.
Hold on. Do you think he's more worried about a game, or do you think that Donald Trump has already taken on some of the major issues of this country? Taxes, Obamacare, national security, border security. This isn't the only thing he's doing, but I also expect Donald Trump, like all presidents, to be multidimensional. We certainly got to hear President Obama's opinion on the Final Four and a whole bunch of other things that didn't have that much to do with his job. Do you want the president to say the only thing I talk about are national public policy issues? Or do you think occasionally he's going to see something like a protest and say, I don't think that protest is right?
Right. And I don't feel like he's dealing with it the right way. I think we can all agree
on
that.
What is the right way to send a message to the NFL? If you're the president and you've got the biggest stage in the world, literally, anything he says publicly is going to be paid attention to. What is the right way to say, I think it's wrong for people to refuse to stand for the national anthem as an anti-American message? What's the better way to deal with that?
Start by asking them what the problem is and trying to figure out a solution.
He has, but I'm telling you, I think when they object to you mentioned police brutality. Could you give me your favorite example of inappropriate police violence?
I don't have a favorite.
Well, the biggest one you can think of, the one that makes you the most mad.
I couldn't give you a particular incident.
There's police brutality. You just can't name a single instance of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've dealt with it. The police stopped me in front of my house loading a lawnmower up in my truck.
Yeah.
I live out in the country, and I guess they thought I was too black to live here.
What did they ask you?
They asked me for my ID and to prove that I lived here, as I'm in my own driveway.
Was that wrong?
I believe it was wrong.
See, I've been with cops on ride-alongs where they've stopped a guy walking down the street with a pillowcase full of stuff. It turned out it wasn't his stuff. It had been burgled out of a house, and he wasn't black. He was a white guy, but they stopped him because, you know, they wanted to know what was in the bag, and all they did was ask him some questions. I appreciate good policing. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network, and our go-to guy on legal questions is Professor Tung Yin, who's at Lewis and Clark Law School. Professor, good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
I want to ask you about this. There is a phony excuse, it sounds like to me, that Democrats are using to try to block one of President Trump's judicial nominees, and I want to know what you think of it, because as I understand it, the Democrat members of Congress are saying the president can't make these appointments to the federal courts unless a bipartisan committee from the state involved, in this case Oregon, agrees to the nominee. And it's been pointed out that there have been nominees before during the Obama administration that did not go through this kind of process. But now Wyden and Merkley and the rest of these jokers are saying, no, we can't do it without having this sign-off. Is that the case?
Well, I think the answer for why there wasn't a commission for the Obama nominees is that Wyden and Merkley and Obama are all of the same party. And so I think what's really going on is that there has been a tradition, and that's really all it is a tradition that the senators of the state from which the judge will be seated, even though it's a federal judge, obviously they will take up geographic residence in a particular jurisdiction, that the senators will have some sort of informal say in the nomination. And that's accomplished through the blue slip, which is basically they return the blue slip to let the nomination go forward.
Right.
You know, has there been a commission? Well, there certainly didn't need to be a commission because President Obama, you know, might have given a courtesy call to Merkley and Wyden and gotten their approval, but they were basically all going to be on the same page. I think it's when you have the president and one or both senators of a different party that you tend to get these clashes. But I don't think there have necessarily been commissions in the past. There was the story where Judge Graber was interviewed, and I think...
Susan Graber, yeah.
Yes, and she did not recall any sort of commission at all. And so I think it may just be a cover that that Senators Merkel and Wyden want to use rather than just simply coming out and saying, look, we're not going to return loose lip and just admit that it's politics.
Well, but here's what I don't understand about this. The two senators, Wyden and Merkel, wrote, we cannot return a blue slip on any judicial nominee that has not been approved by our bipartisan judicial selection committee. Well, the two senators from Oregon are Democrats. So how do you, unless you include the other members of the congressional delegation, four Democrats and one Republican, there's no such thing as a bipartisan judicial selection committee if they're all Democrats, is there?
Well, of course, you know, we're speaking hypotheticals, right? We don't even know what this commission is. But if the commission were, let's say, made up of, I don't know, local lawyers and judges and so on, and that those members happen to be bipartisan, I guess that would be bipartisan.
Well, but. And then that would argue that, yes, you're right, President Obama made a nomination and both the senators are Democrats. But if they included other members, Republicans, to make it a bipartisan commission, then they should have done the same thing during Obama, shouldn't they?
Yes.
And they didn't, obviously, because Susan Graber wrote, she said, there is no such commission where I am, so I'm submitting my name. She apparently just said she told, you know, she made it known that she wanted the job, and she got nominated for the job.
That's right. And, you know, just as an aside, I remember when she was nominated and confirmed because I was clerking for Judge Wallace, the former chief judge in the Ninth Circuit. And in reading opinions that came out of her chambers, I thought, actually, you know, these seem fairly reasonable. So maybe there's something to be said for not having any kind of judicial commission and having people just self-nominate.
Yeah, well, why do you suppose then both Wyden and Merkel seem to feel there's a need to justify they're refusing to back up, you know, Ryan Bounds for a seat on the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals?
You know, I'm speculating here, but if I had to guess, my guess would be that the Democrats pushed the filibuster. They filibustered Supreme Court nominee, and as a result, there's no more filibuster for Supreme Court nominations. And so I think maybe they're afraid that if they simply push openly the idea that, look, we're the senators, we've had this longstanding blue slip ability, and we're claiming our privilege, that the majority of the Senate might say, you know what, the blue slips are becoming too much of an obstruction, let's get rid of that as well.
Do you think that the lack of a blue slip is going to hold back President Trump in pushing this forward? Because he doesn't seem held back by any other political traditions or conventions.
No, not the president. But, of course, in this particular regard, what President Trump would need is for Mitch McConnell to agree to do something about the blue slip.
I know what he could do with it. He could ignore it. He could say, we'll ignore it just like we did with Graber, because you don't have a bipartisan judicial nominating process or committee, except that McConnell these days doesn't seem to want to do anything that would make him look like a Republican. He seems to be imitating a Democrat these days.
Well, that's what I mean, is that what President Trump would really need, at this point, he's made the nomination, and it's apparently stalled for now. And unless McConnell agrees to take action, I don't know if there's anything more the president can do beyond simply taking to the airwaves and making a public case for his nominee.
I just think this is kind of pathetic for a couple of Democrats to say, we cannot return a blue slip that has not been approved by a bipartisan judicial selection committee. And then you point out that nobody even knows what this committee is that Wyden's referring to. Is he just making it up out of whole cloth, or just saying that the bipartisan committee consists of whoever Ron Wyden wants to talk to about the nomination?
Well, I think there's a lot about the degree to which Congress has sunk in the last decade or so that's quite regrettable.
Well, he says, we have a long history of organizing a committee charged with thoroughly vetting applicants from the Oregon legal community. Well, apparently not long enough to reach back to Susan Graber's choice, right?
Well, they, I mean, again, you know, who knows what he referred to as meaning in terms of a commission, but I'm sure that they do some kind of vetting. But again, whether one wonders, well, why can't they just do the vetting right now on Ryan Bounds?
Yeah, I'd be fine with that, except that I guess I really resent it when a senator that I already think lies to me by talking to me about living in Oregon when, in fact, he lives in the state of New York, then turns around and invents a committee or commission and says, it's been around a long time, we've always relied on it, and it doesn't seem to exist.
Yeah, no, I think that would be hard to defend.
Yeah, I would think so, too. Professor, unless you want to weigh in on the NFL controversy today, I appreciate your time.
Sure. I mean, I not completely my degree of expertise, but I am a football fan.
What do you think of the league allowing its players, its employees, to use the NFL as a platform for their political objection to whatever it is they're objecting to?
You know, I think my view is that there's sort of the legal rights that employers might have, because of course the NFL is a private entity, and so the players have no First Amendment rights in that sense, versus the prudent course of action. And my guess is that if the NFL really took a hardline stance on this, it probably would draw even more attention than simply letting the players do what they want.
Yeah. Although they're setting themselves up, aren't they? Because the next time the players decide they want to protest something that the league isn't crazy about, then folks, if the league says you can't do that, the players are automatically going to say, well, you let us object to Trump or police brutality or equal opportunity or whatever it is that they're protesting, because you can't exactly tell what the players are protesting as a group. I mean, I don't know if it's the election of Trump, police brutality, equal opportunity, or they don't like the song, which was suggested by one of my callers a moment ago.
Well, here's the funny thing about it. As I understand it, this began with Colin Kaepernick.
Yep, it did.
And that one of his complaints, so his complaints seemed to be about police brutality against African Americans and something about paid leave for police officers who are accused of shooting African American men. And so here's the funny thing about paid leave is that if you want to trace the cause of that, one would have to say that it's because the police unions do what they do, which is they protect their union members and they push for that. And so, you know, you can look at the analogy to the NFL Players Union, which similarly protects its players from, you know, possibly erroneous charges. And I don't know what's going on with Ezekiel Elliott, but maybe he's innocent, maybe he's not. But if he were to be suspended, he's going to be paid. And you know why? Because the NFL Players Union has pushed for that. So if Kaepernick is really serious about people who are accused of horrible things, like shooting unarmed people, that they should not be put on paid leave, they should be put on unpaid leave, then, you know, maybe you should also look inward at the Players Union and what the Players Union also supports for some people who are accused of unsavory conduct.
That is an excellent point. I didn't know about that one. So the players are effectively pushing for the police not to get what their own members get at a considerably higher rate of pay than the average man or woman in blue.
Well, I don't know about the players in general. I just remember that this is what Kaepernick was one of his complaints.
Yeah. Well, and again, we don't know what the whole group of them is protesting because they haven't exactly communicated. They're just like a lot of today's protests, whether it's Antifa or Black Lives Matter or Occupy or any of those. A lot of times you can't even tell what it is they're objecting to. Professor, it's a pleasure to have you on as always.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks very much. Professor Tung Yin from Lewis and Clark Law School. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. More than my share of naysayers today, but you know how much I like naysayers. So let's go first to naysayer John. Hey, John, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to address the brutality issue, but if you want to know what's on Wyden's mind, you should give him a call, or at least call a Portland office and talk to Chris Meyer.
I've talked to Wyden's office so many times in the last 20 years, and he has never once agreed to an interview. So there you go.
Okay, I think one thing to make less brutal would be to, if the rules of engagement, you should use the same rules of engagement as the troops do in Afghanistan.
And how would that work in a civilian world? if you see someone who appears to be threatening, just shoot them?
Well,
you think that would work?
They shoot first. Yeah, it works. It works on civilian cities of Afghanistan.
Well, yeah, not a good idea here, but thanks for the call. Let's go to naysayer Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, last week you guys talked about the postal employees, and this guy was smoking in his truck. You know, I was a postal employee, and the fact remains that if you stood outside your truck and smoked, they're upset because, you know, you're not doing your job. And then you said that we were using government fuel. You know, the post office isn't subsidized by the government in any way, shape, or form.
Hold up a second. The Postal Service is still a government agency. It is, in theory, an independent government agency. But because they haven't been fully funding their pensions, the taxpayers are on the hook for whatever liabilities or deficits the Postal Service has. So while you're right, it is subsidized in this sense, the U.S. government has a law that says nobody else can compete with the Postal Service on first-class mail. Now, the Postal Service gets about 80 to 85% of its revenue from first-class mail, which is currently a losing proposition because the whole world is going away from first-class mail for a whole variety of things that used to be routinely first-class mail, especially sending out bills and paying bills. So when you say they're not subsidized, they have an effective subsidy by getting a monopoly. And the monopoly is on first-class mail, which used to perform very well for them and now does not. And we're on the hook should they run up liabilities that they can't pay, which they're doing right now, to the tune of about $1 billion a year or better. The taxpayers are on the hook.
Yeah. Well, what they should do is, you know, since we're a nonprofit organization, I retired from the post, but since they're a nonprofit organization, anytime we've made a profit, the Board of Governors took it away from us. If they would allow them to keep it, not to use it right away, but to be able to keep their profit so they could use it later on, stamps wouldn't go up as much.
So you're saying they made excess revenues, which in a for-profit company you'd call profit, any revenues beyond expenses. Right. What are you saying they did with the money? Because right now they lose a lot of money every year. They don't make money.
Well, they don't usually, right now they probably are because, like you said, because of the of internet and stuff. But before, when I worked there, I mean, I had worked there for 8 years, but when I worked there, the first year though they raised stamps, we always made a profit. If we made a profit, the Board of Governors took it, and they used it for whatever they wanted to use.
Well, probably modernizing your equipment and systems, which, by the way, would you agree with me? Everything I've read about the Postal Service in my research indicates they lag far behind both FedEx and other carrier services in modernization, and that's a tough place to be. If you don't modernize your computers and your systems, you can't compete very well.
Well, I can't disagree with that. I was just wanted you to understand, or at least people understand that, you know, the carriers do the best job they can.
I know.
You know, they're under a lot of pressure, and the fact that we don't get to keep our profit, which would help. I mean, I'm sure they end up buying the vehicles. You're probably correct about that.
Well, yeah, they spend the money on the systems. So in other words, the Postal Service has to buy buildings. They have to buy land in some cases for facilities. They have to buy vehicles and computers. As I understand it, the place has never run with a lot of excess revenue, and it has been independent for more than 40 years, and it's losing money hand over fist right now. And we're all going to get stuck with the tab.
Yeah, and unfortunately with the post office, you know, when they wanted to get rid of parcels, you know, about 15 years ago or so, they decided they wanted to get rid of parcel post, or at least some of it.
And now they're getting back into the business. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Gentlemen, you ready for the big show?
You all ready?
Exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This could have been avoided if we'd followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer?
Now, here's Lars Larson.
Be sure and keep that volume up.
On FM News 101.
It's going to be one of the highest rated shows ever.
KXL.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Happy Monday from the Radio Northwest Network. We've got a lot going on today. Our Twitter poll, which you find at LarsLarson.com, is the NFL right to back its players' protests against the national anthem and the country? I would say no, the NFL is not right to do that. They have a right to do it, but having a right to do something does not make it the right thing to do. As I said, you can find it at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Rock, gravel, sand, and topsoil. Let the Dan Jones trucks put it where you want it and save your aching back. And while you're there voting in the quick poll, visit my trophy room at LarsLarson.com. Doesn't cost anything. Post a picture and a paragraph about your latest hunting or fishing adventure and get the chance to win some great prizes. If you'd like to jump in to the greatest conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day on the 24 affiliate stations of the Radio Northwest Network, 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Friday's Twitter poll, we asked, should police use overwhelming force against threats or only proportional force? That had to do with the Seattle case, in which they decided that the Obama-era rules had said you can only use proportional force. Well, 78% of you joined me in voting for overwhelming force when they face a threat. Only 22% of you said it should be proportional force. We've got the NFL and Donald Trump's comments on Friday saying when you see somebody out there taking a knee during the national anthem and being disrespectful to the country and to the flag and the anthem, do you want the owners to say you're fired to those players? Should Democrat Congressman Anthony Weiner, who was sentenced today, get more than 21 months in prison for his ongoing sexting with a 15-year-old girl that it had some effect on Hillary Clinton's campaign for president as well? Why is Seattle building a light rail line based on ridiculously phony numbers? Even the Daily Dead Fish rapper, the Seattle Times, reported on the amount of money that is covered in typical mass transit. You're likely to get 20 to maybe 40% of the money to run those buses from the fare box. The rest of it comes from other taxpayers who, in most cases, do not even ride the train or the bus. But now they want to build a $177 million local line, just a streetcar. And they would, the current streetcars only cover about 23% of the cost, less than a quarter with the fares that are paid by riders. But they now say that a brand new streetcar that's going to cost $177 million is going to cover over 50% of its operating cost for the three lines, which is ridiculous. I mean, you don't find those kinds of numbers anywhere, and I have a feeling they're overpromising, and then when they underdeliver, you're already stuck with the bill, and you can't do anything about it. And in Snohomish County, the health officials there say they've had such a demand for free needle kits that they actually ran out. Now imagine this. One of the biggest problems in America is people shooting heroin and overdosing and dying. Another problem is when the rest of us go to public parks and we find dirty needles that kids are exposed to. So you have dirty needles and the solution is to give away more needles? Does that make any sense? All of that in your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let's go to Naysayer Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind and where do we disagree?
Lars, thanks so much for taking my call on malapropism on Monday. Hey, you know, I really don't disagree with you on what Trump has accomplished. I think the idea of not doing the Iran nuclear deal is a good idea. I think North Korea needs to be reined in. But, you know, what's still just offensive to me is his hillbilly presentation. Now, is SOB a word you can say on the air now, Lars?
I played the soundbite earlier, so if it's not, I may be in trouble tomorrow. But I think you can probably get away with it. And I understand what you're saying. He doesn't speak the way I speak. But again, I think he gets a lot of attention to what he says because of the way he says it. Jim, one of my biggest frustrations over the last 20 years doing talk is talking to politicians who couldn't say butter if they had a mouthful. You know, and you'll ask them a question. So is this a good idea? And they can't say yes. They can't say no. They give you some mealy-mouthed, you know, dancing around the bush kind of answer that doesn't tell you anything. And they do that so they can have an escape clause to say, well, I didn't say I was in favor of it, and I didn't say I was against it. Well, then you shouldn't be in a decision-making position if you can't say one way or the other. There are a few things. I even come on the air occasionally and say I'm kind of ambivalent. I can see the points on both sides. That's a rarity. That happens only now and then. Most days I can say that's a good idea, it's a bad idea, and I'll tell you why. I like a president who actually communicates in the common vernacular, even when occasionally he kind of pushes your buttons by using a term like SOB.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay, so that's all we disagreed about?
Well, it's just offensive to me as a citizen who's trying to put an image of this country out into the world to have him debasing international leaders and calling them out in ways that are, I think, offensive to everybody. I think there's diplomacy that needs to be employed. You're a communicator. You know that.
I try to do that, but doesn't it bother you? Look, if you talked about a friend of yours who got stinking drunk on Friday night and embarrassed all of you, if you were a politician and somebody asked you about it on Saturday, you'd say, well, I was deeply disappointed by so-and-so's behavior. And you'd say, what does that mean? You say the guy was drunk on his butt and he embarrassed all of us. He acted like a jackass. You say, and that's that you can understand. I don't understand why people try to pretty things up with language that's designed only to hide what you're saying or to soften the blow of what you're saying. I mean,
MO.
I had a friend. I had a friend. He's gone now, but this was several years ago. But my wife and I were talking about, he and his girlfriend came over to our house on 4th of July, and there were a whole bunch of people there, and he got drunk and passed out. I mean, he went to sleep, but he passed out. And the next day we said, you know what? He's a drunk, and we don't want to do that at our house anymore. Now, he didn't do anything embarrassing, but we said, look, we don't want to participate in giving him the booze so that he can sit there and get so drunk he passes out. And but we don't talk about it as, I didn't say to Tina, well, I was deeply disappointed in so-and-so's behavior. you try and speak it out, because otherwise, what should people think you're trying to do if you try to pretty something up?
I mean,
if your daughter gets dumped by her boyfriend, do you try to say, well, I'm deeply disappointed that Jim has decided to pursue other female opportunities in his life rather than you say, the guy's a creep. He dropped our daughter, you know. And so I like communicating. And I think I use the word ain't from time to time. I try not to overuse it, but I haven't banished it from my vocabulary, because there are times when a really good ain't puts an exclamation point on a sentence in a way that isn't, just simply doesn't cut it. Right?
You learned that in Tillamook, didn't you?
I've learned that in a lot of small towns. Happy camp.
Nice talking to you, Lars.
Thank you, too. I appreciate the phone call. Klamath Falls in a lot of places. Got to learn how to use ain't. Where to use it and where you ain't going to use it. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the program. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and your emails. Let's go to Joe in Seattle. Joe, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hello, Lars. How are you doing, hero?
I'm doing all right. What's on your mind?
Janae's there about what our POTUS said about the NFL players getting them off the field and everything. I agree. Everybody wants to paint him as this politically correct figure and all that. But instead of hearing and getting caught up on what the man said and how he said it, what they need to concentrate and focus on is the frustration that drives it, because the meaning of what he said is fueled by the frustration that he has got a platform to voice. And I would be willing to say 80 to 90% of his supporters feel that same way. Now, they might not use the vernacular skills that he did and the colorful terminology, but don't get caught up on how he said it. Get caught up on what drove it to have to be said. Yep. This is so ridiculous what we're seeing in our athletes, who have forgotten that the foundation of this country is what has enabled them to rise and relish in all of their success. That's my first point.
Yep.
Second point.
I agree with you.
These clean injection sites and these needle kits. maybe I'm the oddball in the room, but if I get a DUI, I'm going to get a ticket. It's going to cost me money. No one's going to give me a fifth of whiskey and say, hey, we're going to just put you over here. I don't understand the mentality. I work in Seattle. I live in south of here, but I work in Seattle, and I see this PC, you know, make the easy wrong over the hard right all the time. I just don't understand the thought process that says, hey, this is a heroin addict. Instead of getting him off of this, we're going to give him a clean needle and a clean site to do it with, and we'll even meter. And if he ODs, we'll bring him back with some Narcan. Let me see an alcoholic get that type of treatment in the public's eye. I don't get it.
No, because I guess the heroin addict would probably say, you already have a safe place to take your alcohol. It's called a bar, but you pay for that. The city of Seattle wants to have these safe injection sites, and the public, the non-heroin using public, ends up paying for it. And by the way, there are needle cleanup kits that are being used by Snohomish County in Everett, and they apparently have run out of the kits, and these are, you know, the Sharps container and a pair of tongs that you can pick up the needles with. So you've got programs that are giving away free needles to junkies who then use them and drop them wherever, and then people have to go out and pick up the dirty needles somewhere. And now the city of Seattle wants to create a place for people to do this kind of thing, to shoot up with heroin. I mean, the whole thing just sounds crazy. And what? One of the biggest causes of death in this country right now is heroin overdoses. Why would you want to provide people a safe place to inject in something, doing something with an illegal drug that kills a lot of people every year?
Exactly, and it just blows my mind because I have to pick these needles up from around my where I work on a regular basis, and we've actually had council members come out from the Seattle Council, and they give you the dual lip service PC answer, and they don't do anything, and it's just it escapes my comprehensive ability. It really does.
Well,
but that was my point
both.
I wanted to make. And I want to tell you, thank you for what you do, Hero, because it's people like you that are willing to say what is actually needing to be said. But I do have a question on your opinion of something.
Go for it.
I watch the news religiously. I listen to KBI daily, 5 to 7 days a week.
Thank you.
And I hear all of the people talking about, oh, the president's poll ratings are down to the lowest point and everything. These are the same pollsters who have him as being a miserable loser and Hillary being a landslide win. Do they actually think we're that inept that we're going to believe their polls now? And what is your thought? I mean, I know what his base support is, but the fact that they put these bogus poll numbers out there, it can't be accurate. I mean, it just blows my mind.
No, I have the same thought. And what's funny is people in politics will believe poll numbers that are belied by their own eyes. I remember all last fall when people were saying Trump's going to lose, and I kept saying, well, hold on. The polls show Hillary ahead by 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 points, and every time she shows up at a venue, on the rare occasion she did, she couldn't fill a church, let alone filling a stadium, and Trump is filling stadiums. And they'd say, yeah, but the polls say that she's way ahead. And I kept saying, yeah, but what are your own two eyeballs telling you? And I take your point. By the way, on the point about the way he said it, Joe, I can't tell you how many times I've explained to listeners. They said, well, why don't you say X? And I'll say, because then the way I say it will become the issue. Rather, you know, why don't you call Hillary a blankety blank? And I'll say, because then the conversation is what the words were I used rather than what I said. And Trump does, to some extent, weaken his position. If he had stood in front of that crowd and said, the next time one of these guys takes a knee when the anthem's playing, wouldn't you like to see the owner tell him you're fired? If he had said that and left out the SOB, it likely would have forced people to confront what he said rather than why he said it. Although, I told the previous caller, I kind of like somebody who can actually speak the way most of America speaks.
Agreed. The man sometimes is his own worst enemy with some of his vocabulary. But again, don't get caught up on how it was said. They need to concentrate on the message that brought about the need.
Well,
that's all I need to say. I know
thank
you're busy.
You.
Thank you very much, Hero.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Matt in Grants Pass at the other end of the Northwest. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm great, Lars. So I think Trump, even though I know he said something similar to this, missed an opportunity to talk about one of the things that makes us the greatest. That's free markets. You know, I knew when the word son of a bitch, excuse me, I hope that's okay on the radio, when I knew he said that, I thought, oh, man, that now every one of them's going to take a knee.
Well.
So I wasn't surprised just because of the language. It like went from, you know, I think anti-cop to anti-America to now it's anti-Trump and everything else, right?
Yep.
If he had just come out and somebody asks about that, or he brings it up in that, because I did watch the speech in Alabama, it's just to say, free markets take care of everything.
They really do. Eventually they do, because, look, the NFL's numbers are already down. They were apparently down for yesterday's games. I have a feeling they will likely be down tonight unless they're up a little bit because people are tuning in to see what's going to happen with Jerry Jones. And then I have a feeling next weekend they're probably going to see a big drop. And I think they know it. Now,
Mark, for years I've been buying the NBA package. I mean, I think 10 years, almost as long as they've offered it.
Yeah.
And I pay somewhere around $200. And so I can watch games. My son likes to watch basketball. I'm already as much. I coached for 26 years. I've been playing the game since I was 7. I'm 54. If those guys start taking a knee, I cancel the package. I will not watch one NBA game. And if the college teams do it, I won't watch them. I'm going to go watch some of my local basketball teams here in Grants Pass. If I see anyone taking a knee, I'm walking out. I'm done.
Well, and I think they better take that message to heart, because I think that, you know, they've misread their audience. And ultimately, the NFL is a business. And for some reason, they're letting the folks who play in the game make the decisions about how the league, you know, presents itself to America. And think about how closely most sports businesses regulate their image. They regulate their logo, the use of their name, how their name is displayed, what products they associate with. And then they get ahead and get behind this kind of anti-Americanism, and they think that red-blooded Americans who watch football are going to respond well to that. That just seems dumb. Although they may be letting a lot of people who live in the biggest cities in America make those decisions. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and emails. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network, and those calls come in to 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. There was a story. I just got to say something about it. Most of the topics that I ask you about, I frame them as a question. I got a lot of questions on this, but they all have one answer. So the story is Vancouver police have arrested a 17-year-old boy accused of hacking into a girl's social media account and sharing nude photos of her that were kept in a private section of the account. Just in that one sentence, you're asking yourself, as a parent and grandparent, first of all, what possessed your daughter to take nude pictures of herself? Secondly, if she did that, what in the world made her think that putting them on the internet, even in a locked portion of her Facebook account, was a great idea? And then, of course, you have the crime that was committed by this young man. And it sounds as though he is charged at this point on 15 counts of first-degree voyeurism. He's probably lucky, could face some additional charges. But if he's dealing with pictures, sexually provocative pictures of an underage girl, we're talking about kiddie porn, but no charges like that have been brought yet, but they could be. And we've seen a lot of kids tripped up by this. When you have a child in your household who has a Facebook account, do you think it would be a great idea to sit down with them and say, I need to see everything that's on your account, locked or unlocked, and I need to make sure you're not putting yourself at risk by doing this kind of thing? But apparently in this case, she did not have that conversation, or she, as many teenagers do, lied to her parents. But my goodness, the kind of damage that's done, and assume that anything that has been on the internet for 1 second is on the internet forever. And in this case, she may have done some tremendous damage to herself, aided and abetted by the crime of this young man for hacking into her account. And he may be I don't know what they're going to do to him. But he has a right to his day in court. But when he's done with that, he may find himself registered for the rest of his life, which would be a really terrible thing to have to deal with. Let's go to Bryn, who's in Longview. Hey, Bryn, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller, and I got a little fired up in the car about the needle exchange and injection sites. I have a one-and-a-half-year-old son, and I am 32 weeks pregnant. Oh, thank you. I'm also 32 weeks pregnant with my second boy, and
wow,
it upsets me to no end. I am on Facebook all the time, and I see pictures of people posting at local parks, you know, around our lake and stuff, that they had to pick up needles before their children could even play. And
that's disgusting.
You know, it's gross. Yeah, it's gross, and it's disgusting, and it honestly, it makes me so angry that, you know, we can't take our children to a spot that is supposed to be safe and fun for them without having to worry, like, well, if I take my eyes off of them for 2 seconds, you know, they could possibly pick up a needle, step on a needle, you know, just terrible things. And then they wanted to bring in, you know, the injection sites and the needle exchange program. Are you kidding? Really?
Isn't that nuts? Because you think, like, if you think it's scary taking your child to one of these parks, I've got a granddaughter. At some point, we'll be going to public parks. Mostly she plays in our yard right now, but because she's extremely young, 17 months or almost 18 months. But I think about the fact that you can't scour a park, you know, enough to make sure that if you step on one needle, imagine that you may be waiting a couple of weeks to find out, does your child or grandchild have hepatitis? Does your grandchild have AIDS? They've been exposed. You're going to go through six kinds of hell waiting to find out, you know, what the answer to that question is. And, you know, do I know a snap answer that'll fix this problem? No. But the idea that a city is going to sponsor a site that aids and abets people in shooting heroin, I think that's a terrible idea. And I know there will be people saying, but if they shoot there, then they won't be shooting in the parks. Yeah, as long as you assume that somebody who's a heroin addict driven to shoot these drugs will do all of their shooting up at that one site and not in a park, in a restroom, at school or wherever. And I don't assume they will do all their shooting at just the one place.
Oh, no, I don't think that they would do it in the one place either. I mean, and, you know, it's a nice, pretty thought for people who think the world is full of sunshine and rainbows, you know, that, oh, all heroin addicts will go to this one spot, and then when they're done, they'll leave, you know, they'll throw their needles away properly, and then they'll leave, and then they'll come back when it's ready for more. That's not what's going to happen. They're going to find a spot that's comfortable for them, you know, that's either secluded or just tucked away, and they'll go and do what needs to be done, and then that's it. You know, and I don't feel comfortable enough taking my son to a park anymore. So I just go to my mom's house. We spend, you know, the days in her yard, you know, her front yard and her backyard, because I am too afraid to take him anywhere because that's all I see.
That's a sad state. Do you know, there were communities, I don't know if Seattle's one or Portland's one today, but there were communities that made it illegal to operate what are called opium dens. And back in a long time ago. And the reason was that the place itself didn't sell the dope. In some cases they did, but in most cases they didn't. But they said just allowing a place where people come and take drugs is aiding and abetting the taking of drugs. So we're going to make it illegal for someone to run a place, even if they don't sell the dope, even if they don't, you know, help the person smoke it in that case or shoot it or whatever. Well, the city of Seattle is talking about doing that. And now, to cap that off, the city is now joining a lawsuit to try to keep the voters from voting on it, because they don't want the voters to. And now there's a lawsuit right now, and the city of Seattle has joined into it. I put it on the list today because they don't even want the voters to vote on it. So here it is. The city of Seattle wants to join a lawsuit to challenge a King County initiative that would ban so-called safe injection sites. In court documents that were filed on Friday, Seattle asked a King County judge to allow it to intervene in the lawsuit by a group called Protect Public Health. The group sued, seeking to invalidate August the Initiative 27 before it goes to voters. Well, so the city is saying, not only will we support safe injection sites, so-called, but we don't even want the people voting on it, because I think they know that if this goes to a public vote, it's going to go down in flames. So the idea the government wants to forbid its citizens from even directly taking part in making that decision, that's offensive.
Something that's going to, you know, for most of us who don't do drugs, you know, that's going to, oh, my God, that's just a terrible idea. Oh, gosh.
Well, listen, good luck to you. How many more weeks have you got?
I have got probably eight weeks.
Did you decide to find out if it's a little boy or a little girl?
We found out when we could, around 20 weeks, and we found out it was another little boy, and we are very, very excited. We have a Morris Gregory, and now we're going to have a Calvin Edward.
Calvin, and now where did that name come from? Any place special?
Well, my husband, who's sitting here smiling, is named after Cal Ripken Jr.
Ah, nice. Very nice. Well, congratulations to both of you, and thank you so much for the phone call, Brent. I appreciate it. That's great. New mom. And now she's going to have her hands full. Two little boys. One's going to be, almost 2 years old by the time the other one's born? You've got your hands full. Good. God bless you. Let's go to Ron. Ron, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Larson, this is your favorite conservative brother of another mother.
Yes, you are.
Nevertheless, Lars, them having these black guys, they're saying they're being oppressed.
Yeah.
I want you to think about it. They portray this Michael Crapper that's over there in Missouri. Another guy that tries to blame it all on white people that did this and that. And at the same time, you know, I like what Mr. Drew Brees did. He says, we there supposed to be going to doing the national anthem should be done. No matter what your beliefs is, this, no, no. You can do it beforehand or after the game and make your complaints about why you disagree on things. But at the same time, when you go do the national anthem, we are supposed to be there united as for only a couple of minutes as one group, Americans of all races, colors, creeds, and backgrounds. But for them, and I'm not going to look at NFL football no more till they change it, hold the people accountable. And at the same time, Lars, LeBron James, as far as I care, if he thinks everything's up bad and all these guys think it's all that bad, why don't they put the money where the mouth is? Take his $35 million a year that he gets from Nike for the next 10 years, or $350 up to $500 million he's going to get over 10 years, and put it back in the communities like Cleveland. Put it back in Juvka. They all talk about doing this stuff, but they don't put the money and the work behind back in. They might throw a couple million dollars, which means nothing if you're a top star player in basketball or football. But yet, they go through and they think that they're going to rule the world. They have no respect. They disrespect my father's father, the Tuskegee Airmen. They disrespect other people that fought for the civil rights and everything else, or died for the country. That's what the national anthem is for.
Nicely put. Ron, thanks for the call. Back in a moment. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I wonder how all those Lane County government workers down in Eugene are feeling about their union representation. As you know, the unions got out behind Hillary Clinton. They also got behind Barack Obama. Well, now Lane County is in a dispute with its employees. The employees say they're ready to go on strike. And why? Because they've asked the employees to start paying somewhere between, depending on the worker, $20 and $70 a month toward their own health insurance. I have a feeling they have the gold-plated type of health insurance a lot of government employees have that costs north of $1,000 a month, can be as high as $2,000 a month, and they don't want to pay $20 to $70 a month. Well, guess what? Costs are up dramatically. And why? Well, largely because of Obamacare. Premiums doubled under Obamacare, and the deductibles and copays went up as well. So to all those Lane County government workers who threaten to go on strike rather than pay some of their health care costs, how's that Obamacare working out for you anyway? Let's go to Lee in Seattle. Lee, thanks for listening on Talk Radio 570. What's on your mind?
Well, firstly, a quick compliment. But, Lars, there's no other place to be during the hours you're on the air.
You're very generous. Thank you.
Spectacular broadcaster.
I appreciate it.
But it struck me, listening to the needle, safe needle place, struck me like we recognize that we have a problem with people robbing banks, but somebody says, well, hey, there's no reason someone should get killed. Let's pass out bulletproof vests because people are just going to rob banks. No one has to get hurt.
That's a great comparison.
Anyway, that's it.
Thank you very much.
Keep doing what you're doing because you're the best and you enrich me.
Lee, let's see if we can get the city of Seattle to actually let its citizens sound off on this. I have the feeling the citizens will make a good decision. Thanks for the compliment. Let's go to Jared in Bandon. How you doing, Jared?
Good, Lars. Thanks for the call. I just had a comment on that girl who had her Facebook photos exposed. Apple did a thing a while ago with their iPhones where if you synced your phone with Facebook, it automatically uploaded pictures. And I'm not saying she should have taken them, and I'm not saying her parents should not have, you know, looked at her Facebook, but Apple should have been more clear on the whole Facebook syncing thing where it automatically uploads your pictures to that secure file.
That's a very good point, because I wasn't aware of that. I use an Android, and I don't have an Apple phone or an iPhone. But do you think it'd be sensible, and I'm wondering how many parents have ever gone to their children and said, look, I'd like to look at what's on your Facebook page. In the same way that a responsible parent looks at what's in your kid's room. And when I hear people say, well, that's an invasion of privacy. Well, if you're looking out for your kid's safety, I think sometimes that takes an invasion of privacy. And when you're under the age of 18 and living in mom and dad's house, you really don't have any privacy.
Correct. So I agree with all that.
Thank you very much, Jared. I appreciate the call. Let's go to naysayer JB. JB, are you going to stand up for these NFL players?
I disagree with some of the comments that have been made by people. Number one, I don't think what they're doing is disrespecting the flag, and definitely not disrespecting the soldiers. Because I have military in my family. My brother was in the Navy. My brother-in-law was in the Army, and they both are in support of what these players are doing, dealing with the issue of what they're facing and what they're coming up against and how they're going about doing it.
What is the issue? Something. Help me out, because I've been asking all day, what are they actually protesting? What are they actually protesting?
Well, I mean, the issue started with Colin Kaepernick and police brutality, the countless
Michael
young brothers and sisters across the country that have been murdered. And
Countless. Do you understand that most of the times when the police shoot somebody, in the vast majority of cases, the person was presenting a threat and they needed to be shot and it was found to be a legal shooting? So when you say countless, well, I don't have the number right in front of me, but the number of times in the last year that a police officer illegally or inappropriately shot somebody and killed them could be probably counted on the fingers of one hand.
Well, we could go back and forth on those specific issues with the police, but I was calling in about the football players specifically. And so that's the issue started from Colin Kaepernick, and that's what
should we assume that all the other players, 250 or so of them, who protested this last weekend, were all that was their issue too?
Absolutely.
How do you know that?
Obviously, neither one of us can say with certainty what is going through each one of the players' minds. But when the President of the United States comes out and says that some of the white supremacists at the Charlottesville riot are good people, and then to call these professional athletes SOBs, that's very disrespectful.
No, he didn't call it. What he said was, when somebody goes out and takes a knee during the national anthem, don't you want one of the owners to say that SOB is fired? I can replay the soundbite if you like to, but you're trying to say that the president said things that he didn't say. JB, I'm just going to respectfully tell you quoted the president wrong. You got the Lars Larson Show.